that vendor had quality and delivery issues, and we didn't qualify that another vendor that when he was down and his quality was not consistent,
yeah,
we needed to go find out. In the meantime, the line went down.
Oh.
And so it was because we didn't have a second source picked out for a vendor that provided the touchscreen texture on the touchscreen probe. And so we did not do that. We thought we had it covered.
Growing a business requires a holistic approach that extends beyond sales and marketing. This approach needs alignment among people, processes, and technologies. So if you're a business owner, operations, or finance leader looking to learn growth strategies from your peers and competitors, you're tuned into the right podcast. Welcome to the WBS Podcast, where scalable growth using business systems is our number one priority. Now, here is your host, Sam Gupta.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the WBS Podcast. I'm Sam Gupta, your host and principal consultant at digital transformation consulting firm Elevate IQ. You might not worry about vendors until one day your production line stops because you didn't realize that you had a single point of failure with your processes. You might also make a strategic choice to simplify your processes by choosing just one vendor for most of your components. But while you might not have issues as of today, as you may have had reliable vendors supporting you for a long time, it does not mean that you will never face issues because of a single source of supply. What if the vendor gets acquired or they have management changes that might not provide the same service levels that you expect? In today's episode, our guest, David Chavez, shares the nuances of outsourced contract manufacturing. He also discusses several stories where the outsourced vendor processes and supply chain were a major cause for production breakdown and significant financial loss and missed opportunities. Finally, he discusses the process for evaluating global vendors and how to ensure that they are not retaining control that could be a financial risk to your business. Let me introduce David to you. David is over 20 years experienced global outsourced contract electronic professional in aerospace, automotive, healthcare, industrial, and robotics original equipment manufacturers. He has been part of teams that have grown mid-sized companies from $60 million to $120 million and others from $230 million to $1.5 billion within 5 years. He holds a BS in Engineering Technology, an MBA, and a Doctor of Business Administration. With that, let's get to the conversation. Hey, welcome to the show, David.
Hi, Sam. How you doing? Great to be here.
I am doing wonderful, and I am super excited to have you because the kind of background you have in the manufacturing and accounting and finance, obviously, it's going to be so exciting to dig into some of those stories. Just to kick things off, do you want to start with your personal story and current focus, David?
Yes, I mean, really quick. I come from a small South Texas town in Texas. Actually, I'm pretty amazed of the places I've been, the people I work with, because I just come from a small Texas town, farm boy out of Texas. And some of the places that I've been around the world and the people I've worked with is pretty amazing. So I grew up in Texas, and I kind of went into engineering and manufacturing, and that's really my passion. And so I've been fortunate enough to work with some great people, some great organizations, and both small and large. And so, again, I'm really happy to be here. Thank you.
Okay, amazing. So obviously, it's going to be so fascinating to dig into all of those stories, you know, around Texas or outside of Texas. it's going to be so much fun. But before that, we have one of the standard questions and that we ask every single guest. And that is going to be your perspective on business growth, David.
Yeah, business growth, for me, my perspective is primarily finding good partners.
Okay.
And finding good people to and having process and systems in place to get that done. I mean, I've worked with various different types of organizations, like I mentioned, large and small, in the aerospace, in the medical device manufacturing, in the industrial, and also in the robotics industries. And across all the board, it's very, very important to find good partners, to have good systems in place to find those partners, and also good systems and processes to find good people. Yeah. So those are the critical pieces that I see in order for growth. And I can expand a little bit more on that a little bit later, but as a fundamental, those are the two areas that I really, really focus, processes and people.
Yeah, that's amazing. So let's actually connect the dots. I mean, see, I am definitely going to be curious on, I mean, a lot of people, when they think about the partnership, when they think about, you know, suppliers, they don't think of them as the strategic and think of them as how that is going to help them grow. I mean, typically you are going to treat them, hey, I have my customer, 90% of the time I am going to be spending with my customers. Vendors, okay, I'm actually doing business with them. Okay. So tell us why partners matter and how they can enable the growth that these manufacturing companies might be looking for.
Yeah, one of the key things, I did my dissertation on contract manufacturing outsourcing, and we did a substantial amount of research to find out what the pitfalls were in when you were looking for an outsourced partner.
Yeah.
And one of the key areas that kept on popping up was communication.
Okay.
Having great communication. Think about it like a marriage.
Yeah.
You've got to have good communication with your business partner, with your suppliers.
Yeah.
That way they know where you're going and you know where they're going in terms of their technologies, in terms of their investments, in terms of how they're approaching the market. And so it's really important to really understand their suppliers, the culture, their financials, their overall strategy.
Yeah.
And that way build those relationships both across, both on the low end, on the top end of the organization. So it's very, very important. You're almost tied at the hip, because in this outsourcing business, they're a key portion of your business. They're an extension of your company. They're an extension of your factory. So you've got to really make sure when you evaluate and pick these type of partners, you look at across all these different areas that are critical to look at: financial, technology, capabilities, management, on, and to make sure it's a good fit and you continue to grow with them as they grow along with you.
Okay, so in my experience, when I look at the 90% of the small to medium-sized manufacturing, especially, obviously, enterprise customers have figured out that, you know what, they need to treat their vendors differently. They are going to have, you know, processes. They are going to have the specialized people who actually manage the vendor side of relationship, because they understand their importance. But obviously, in these small to medium-sized businesses, you know, they don't really have as much appreciation as they should have, because obviously these relationships are going to be equally strategic. So in your experience, let's say, you know, if you were the business owner, okay, if you were to start on your manufacturing journey, so when is the point or the inflection point in the journey of the growth when they should start getting slightly more serious about how they might be managing their vendor relationships? For example, is it going to be, let's say, if you are a $5 million business, you know what, it's okay if you don't have the formalized structure for your relationship, if you have not identified which are your strategic vendor, which are going to be the most critical for you. So when is that point when you should think slightly more seriously about structuring the processes around your vendors?
Yeah, it depends on the business, and it depends also on the type of business and the industry. But typically, we've seen a business, particularly small startup businesses, that are looking access to technical expertise, manufacturing capacity. A certain type of areas of the world. Let's say they want to grow and grow into Asia or grow into the United States, and they're thinking, man, I like to have a factory there. That way I can be able to fulfill my product close to where my customers are.
Yeah.
And so technology, capacity, geographic location, and sometimes the manufacturer that you're looking at partnering may have something that you don't have.
Yeah.
So whether it's a people, a process, a software, something that you're lacking to make your business grow, that's an area of, but it just depends on the business and the product that you're building. And, but you have to go through that evaluation to see, but typically it's been capacity and technical capabilities that I've seen. A small, medium-sized company may need more capacity because they're outgrown their capacity, or they're lacking a technical capability or technical technology or process. And so those are the areas I've seen. Critical areas, obviously, with this global environment, a lot of times comes with the geographic area where the manufacturer's located. As I mentioned, we're seeing more manufacturing happen where it's closer to the consumer now. Before, it could be further away, but now with the complications of supply chains, et cetera, a lot of companies want to have at least an area where they're building a product closer to where they're consuming the product.
Okay, amazing. Love it. So obviously, it's going to depend on different type of businesses. And let's dig into these stories. So I don't know if you're going to have different stories across different type of businesses. I don't know if you're going to have any sort of evaluation stories that you might be able to share, or maybe, you know, the process maturity story where something happened and you got a call and then you went there and discovered something. And then you figured out that the processes were really broken, so you had to fix them. So tell us some of those stories of different industries, if you could.
Yeah, I'll give you a quick example. I had a customer of ours that was building his product in Asia.
Yeah.
And he came up with you know what, we're coming up with this new product introduction, but it's going to be primarily in North America.
Okay.
So we wanted to build primarily in the supply chain. We need to build the supply chain to support the North American market.
Yeah.
But they were already building it in Asia. So we had to actually get a lot of the work instructions, the documentation, and transferred into English because everything was in Chinese.
Okay.
And that was an area that we had to do. The other thing that we had to do is some of the supply chain here, and then the product actually was a thermostat, a touchscreen thermostat that was being introduced to the North American market. And much of the work instructions, the test information, was again in a different language. We had to transfer. We were transferring it to Mexico. That way, we could be supplying it to our customers in North America. So the challenge we had all the manufacturing areas that we thought were the problem, but what actually ended up being the biggest challenge of all was the test.
Okay.
Testing the product, because this was touchscreen.
Yeah.
And so we had to make sure we duplicate the texture of skin in the actual. So we developing that test, that functional test capabilities, actually ended up being a challenge for us as a contract manufacturer. So we engaged our clients, test engineers, with our test engineers, and we came up with a great functional test system.
Yeah.
And so the biggest things we found out is we thought it was going to be problems with the documentation, with the process, with the manufacturing.
Yeah.
But actually, the biggest challenge was the test. So that's an area that I advise all manufacturers to do, because a lot of people don't think about test. They're just thinking about making sure they get the raw materials, they assemble it correctly, they have the right people, et cetera. Nobody really thinks about making sure you have to test the product correctly and there's good product going out the door.
Yeah.
So that was a key thing that we found out was very important. Now, working jointly with the client's test engineers, with our engineers, to come up with a robust test solution so we can get product out the door, and we didn't get any product returns. So great team effort, because it was something that hadn't been done. The product that was being built in Asia was not touchscreen. It was a strictly manual type of product. It was a different generation product. This was more up to date. So it required the touchscreen functional test capabilities.
Okay, so amazing story there. So I would definitely love to dig a little deeper into that. Okay, so let's talk about the testing problem. Were these testing problems, were they primarily because of communication issues? If communication issues, what kind of communication issues are we talking about? Were these problems because vendors were not informed or were not feeling accountable for the test results, or were they doing the testing, but the testing wasn't working the way you actually wanted to work? So what was the real issue in testing?
Okay, so initially what happened, we thought we were doing everything right. So
okay.
we thought Mr. Customer, this product, you had it built in Asia at some port, but it was an the older generation. We thought, great, this is a next generation product. We're going to get engaged with the design folks, and we get our design people give input. We call that design for manufacturability. We're going to get our test people involved on the test to make sure we have great coverage on the test of the product. And we're going to get our quality people all involved with their quality people, make sure we got it. We thought we were doing everything great. But the things we did not realize as we went through it, once we were going and we built, and the other thing that we tried to do very well is pick a good program manager that has good communication skills. And since he was in Mexico, make sure he understood the cultural differences with Mexico and North America and was a good leader. That's really, really critical. So we make sure we handpick that person to be the captain of the ship on the contract. So that was, we knew if we didn't get that right, there would be a lot of other problems.
Yeah.
And so we did that. The other piece is have cross-functional team meetings early in the new product introduction phase. So we got our customers, their materials team, their engineering team, their test team, and all that involved as we were ramping up this new product that we thought we were doing everything well. Well, we went through the process. We tested. We went through several tests of the lines, of the SMT lines and the assembly lines, and we had everything in there. But the problem is, and we thought we had everything figured on the touchscreen.
Yeah.
The problem is, we didn't underlying issues that we found out that we only had one supplier. Once we figured out the test process of that finger to touch the screen, those things tend to wear out because, again, we were testing it multiple as a touchscreen for a Wi-Fi thermostat.
Yeah,
it wore out. We only picked one vendor to provide that texture on the test probe.
Yeah,
that vendor had quality and delivery issues, and we didn't qualify that another vendor that when he was down and his quality was not consistent.
Yeah,
we needed to go find out. In the meantime, the line went down.
Oh.
And so it was because we didn't have a second source picked out for a vendor that did the touchscreen on the touch that provided the touchscreen texture on the touchscreen probe. And so we did not do that. We thought we had it covered, but obviously that supplier did not deliver, and the quality wasn't there as well. So it gave us inconsistency of the test results. So that was unintended consequence. We didn't realize we were going to run into that. We thought we had everything planned.
Yeah.
It's just we should have a second, because we knew that was a critical path within the overall test process.
Yeah.
We should have had a second source on that supplier.
Okay, so that's a very, very interesting story. So obviously, you know, if you are not going to have that, if your critical path is going to be dependent upon your single point of failure, obviously you are going to run into a lot of challenges. So typically from your experience, and I have seen this situation in a lot of different businesses, obviously in case of manufacturing, when you are talking about these sub-assemblies and you are talking about any critical components of the products, obviously you need to have some sort of, you know, second source of the vendor that can supply those materials. Now, I have looked at, you know, different manufacturing companies as well as distribution companies. I don't know if the second source of the supply is going to be equally critical in case of distribution businesses as well. So I am talking about one of the businesses, and I had very interesting argument with them. Okay. So they were actually in the electronics manufacturing space as well. So they were doing the optical cable that actually go in one of these telecom equipments. So interesting argument was, I was like, you know, okay, we have looked at all of your vendors and I cannot find a second vendor. And they were like, you know what, we don't really have the second vendor for. And the reason why we don't have second vendor is because to simplify our processes. And I was like, okay, how is that simple? So they said, you know what, now we don't have to negotiate. We have just one vendor. You know, we have the price negotiated. We don't have admin overhead. We are always ordering with them. Now, let's say if you are running this business, David, would you sweat? Would you not sweat? how would you change the processes and coach the executives in refining their vendor processes?
Yeah, it's critical. I mean, one of the things that we always found out, our customers was always trying to reduce their costs, right?
Yeah.
And the challenge was is most of the cost was on the supply base that were custom to that product.
Yeah.
So in order to reduce the cost, really the customer needs to look at himself in the mirror to say, hey, if I want to reduce the cost, 80% of your bill of material,
yeah,
I'm sorry, 20% of the bill of material generates 80% of the cost.
Yeah.
And that 20% is controlled by the OEM.
Yeah.
And so the OEM's really responsible to reduce those costs. So from the cost perspective, we were working with, for example, automotive OEMs.
Yeah.
We're building cameras that go in the cars.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you'd look at the bill of material, and again, 20% of the bill of material generate 80% of the overall cost.
Yeah.
But if one did not have dual suppliers, you were done. You couldn't supply those cameras.
Yep.
And so we always, when we get involved in the design process, we always beg our clients to pick two suppliers and qualify two suppliers. One from the price is to keep them honest, and two from the risk.
Yeah.
So you would be down not being able to provide any type of product. And then the argument I would get back from our client or a customer would say that would take double the engineering and double the efforts and double everything. But it far outweighs the risks and the cost associated with having only one supplier, believe me. So I always try to work with the executives, the client base, to see if they can at least, and their major, to be able to qualify at least two suppliers, have number one and number two, at least from the risk mitigation perspective from their business, because that business may generate the lion's share of their revenue.
Yeah.
They're dependent on one supplier. How well did they do a due diligence on risk mitigating that supplier? Does he have the supply chain in place? Does he have dual suppliers on every critical raw material that he has on the suppliers, on his suppliers? So those are the things that really you need to dig deep and ask those five whys when you're evaluating your supply chain and your critical sole source suppliers within your product.
Okay, amazing. So that's a beautiful story. And obviously, you know, dual supply is sort of no brainer, but I am always shocked when businesses resist on that, to be honest. It just blows my mind why they would resist. But I mean, there are reasons at times, which is okay. So now let's say if we look at any other stories that you might have with respect to the vendor relationship, the communication. So what other scenarios that you have seen that might not be related to, let's say, just the source of supply? Let's say even if I have the secondary source of supply, I'm going to have a lot more pitfalls in my supply chain, and there are going to be a lot of breakages, right? So do you have any other stories from any other manufacturing industries that you might be able to share where you had similar problems related to either outsourced manufacturing or because of the vendors?
Okay, so the other story that I do have is, again, it falls back into, I hate to bring this back, but it comes to test. We had another client that for some reason they exited out of another contract manufacturer.
Okay.
And so they called us, they said, this was a medical product,
okay,
by the way.
Yeah.
This was a medical product that went patient monitoring.
Yeah.
And so we looked at it. We said we flew a team down to the factory, a cross-functional team of engineering, program management, materials team, test, all that. We looked at it. We reviewed all the documentation. Yeah. And after we reviewed, we went through some pilot tests within our factory.
Yeah.
And it came immediately apparent to us that the test coverage based on what we took was only covering about 30% of the product.
Wow.
And what happened was the client old contract manufacturing had established some tribal knowledge workarounds within their manufacturing to mask the problems on the test. The fact that they could go out, they had high problems in warranty, 30% plus, but they had just lived with that product. Plus a medical product, it was like a high risk. I mean, you think talking with people's lives. Yeah. So what we ended up doing is working with the client to come up with a whole revamping of their whole test strategy.
Yeah.
Because we found out later on how much return product they had been returned, which was huge.
Yeah.
And we found out the risk that they had with that type of process. So we had revamped that whole, we came up with a whole cross-functional team, came up with a different type of test solution where we included 100% test as opposed to 30% coverage of the test, and reduced their we called it their bone, scrap bone, substantially almost up to zero. So just to sit down and just put that together impacted their whole business unit. Just by going back at the drawing table for improving their overall test. So it involved also changing slightly. They had to go through some approval with FDA and all that, which was it was another issue in itself. But on the long term, it ended up to being the right solution and the right type of actions that we needed to do to protect our client and to protect his reputation long term. But it again, it revolved around test. And it seems like a trivial thing, but it's impacts such a huge amount, and it has such ramifications downstream and upstream of the supply chain.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I like this story because, you know, anytime whatever problem you have in your body, you are probably going to get fever. Okay, irrespective of whether you have a real fever or whether you have a cancer, right? You are probably going to get some sort of temperature up. So quality is the good gauge, and I like, you know, because all the problems that you are going to get, they are going to be caught during either your testing or the quality processes. And that's probably the reason why most of the stories that you have, they are around the test, because the majority of the issues are really going to be around the testing. But I do want to dig deeper into the tribal knowledge issue, because the tribal knowledge, you know, when we talk about the tribal knowledge owned by the vendors, I mean, that's a huge risk in my opinion, okay? That's and a lot of times businesses don't even understand how much knowledge they are retaining. And they sometimes, it could be intentional because that's how they are actually going to keep their business, right? So you won't even know how much knowledge they are keeping. So in your experience, what has been the best practice to make sure that they are not retaining this tribal knowledge with themselves, and you are really keeping that tribal knowledge and document it somewhere so that, you know, if there is going to be a second program manager, you can at least pick up on this process, right?
It is very important. It's painful at the beginning. I actually had experiences with an Asian-based contract manufacturer versus an Eastern Europe contract manufacturer with the same client.
Yeah.
And so he told me, he says, this was for a GPS industrial sensor type of client that was being built. And he told me, he says, David, you have two factories, one in Asia and one in Europe, and they're the same product.
Yeah.
But I got away with your Asian facility with all, they just would just build it for me. And you know what? And the guys over there in Eastern Europe, they stuck by the book. They wanted all the documentation. If they did not have that, they were not going to build.
Yeah.
And they would be tough on us. And they said, where is that document? If that document was not there, they had to recreate it. They had to sit down with us, had to map out the everything. So they were tough on us. He says it was very painful. But you know what?
Yeah.
Long term, it reduced the risk.
Yes.
And it made life easier for us. And he says it was painful initially because we had to be on meetings. We had to fly people over. They had to fly people over here. But once they got all that documentation, all that tribal knowledge documented and in drawings, and the drawings were updated up to date and had the right rev level and corresponded to the right work instructions and everything was tested out and everything. It says this product runs 15 years sometimes.
Yeah.
So you just multiply it, and it was a high volume product.
Yeah.
You multiply that and it pays so much dividends for them because the risk substantially reduces because they have everything documented and they have a good ECO process, engineering change order process.
Yeah.
And it just made things easier. He said, on the other hand, the other team, they ended up discontinuing them because they ended up, it was easier to engage, not that many questions. They would just do it. But overall, in the long term, they ended up having some quality problems. So with the one that was tough to engage, once they got the everything, it was like churning money because the documentations and the systems and the process were in place already. They just put the work up front.
Yeah, that's very, very, very interesting. So obviously, and I don't know, you know, how big this business was. I don't know whether they had some sort of ERP system where they were keeping these, you know, reps or, you know, the design changes or the documentation or the process documentation or the quality results, because obviously it's going to be really easy if you have that. If you don't have that, then obviously you are going to have much harder life in terms of maintaining the documentation. Sometimes, you know, you are going to do it in a half-hearted way just because you are trying to meet the deadline. But after a month, you cannot figure out what you had done. And maybe the person who was working on it is no longer there. So obviously now you cannot pick up on the work. So have you seen any sort of best practices in terms of the documentation? What should be the right way of doing it? Obviously these smaller businesses are not going to have some sort of integrated system. So they still need to maintain the documentation. Otherwise they are going to run into the financial risk. So have you seen any specific best practices around the maintaining the tribal knowledge?
Yeah, I think there's various, obviously the smaller business may not invest in these type of systems. There's all these different, there's several different best in class systems like Agile and other types of software systems where you can track and keep all the documentation on electronic format and has the systems and processes to make sure that any change order or any changes within the drawing and the documentation is tracked.
Yeah.
Some small businesses do not have those type of things. So we're having to create those and have access to our systems. There's some contract manufacturers. I work with seven different contract manufacturers in my lifetime.
Yeah.
And some of them have what they call a transparency portal that you can get into their portal with a username and access. You can get into and look at your own documents, your own processes, your own, and be able to get that information and collaborate with the outsourcing partner. And so the larger the contract manufacturer tends to have these type of systems, but I've also seen small, medium-sized contract manufacturers have good, sophisticated documentation management systems that can manage, particularly a high mix, high change order type of that's really, really critical.
Yeah,
we tend to see a lot of activities around a high mix, low volume activity, and especially in long living products industrial products that have a lifespan are very critical. But yes, there are best in class, but again, we've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly on the client side, particularly startups. They don't have the tools.
So
even small companies that have one or two products and are not very mature, we're having to go out there and get that documentation, put it into the systems that we have, and then at the appropriate time you can have the client share it with the client so he understands that all his documentation is there clean and it's his, because obviously it's his IP.
Okay, amazing. So that's it for today, David. Do you have any last minute closing thoughts or remarks for our listeners?
Yes, I do. I have a very, very important message to any OEM or client that's looking to outsource their manufacturing, not necessarily just manufacturing, any critical process within your business. I would approach it like a marriage.
Okay.
It's like your partner, your business partner. It's a critical part of your business. And the way I would do that is go visit the team, visit the factory, go and interview the people, see the equipment, go down to the floor, talk to the floor in the equipment, see the flow of product, get a feel for their culture, understand their financials, how strong they're, understand their culture, their management, their overall strategy to grow, and see if it meshes with you long term. So it's critical you go through these evaluation stage, because again, I would approach it like a long term marriage that you are getting into. And the way you do that, you just don't, the first date you get married, and based on one quote, that they're the cheapest part. You want to evaluate them, because this is a huge risk or opportunity for your business.
Yeah.
And it's maybe your lifeblood, and that's how you're able to grow if you do those things. I know it's a lot of work, a lot of resources, a lot of time, but it's definitely will pay in the long run in terms of reducing your risk of your business and taking your business off to the next step in terms of growth.
Yeah, and my personal takeaway is going to be similar. Do not try to marry the prettiest. If the prettiest is going to be the most functional as well, obviously that's beautiful. I mean, you are the luckiest person on this earth. But for the most part, look at the comprehensive picture. Just analyze how they are set up, as David correctly pointed out. And obviously, sometimes when you are going to look at the most attractive offer, which could be the cheapest, that's probably not the smartest decision that you are probably going to be making for your life and for your business.
I have one more thing to add to that. I also, you look at the depth and breadth of their bench, because a lot of times you visit somebody and you just show the A players. You want to see several A players underneath that A player, because that A player may go to another client.
Yep.
And so having the depth and breadth of their team is really, really critical.
Could not agree more. Thank you so much, David. This has been so awesome. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Sam. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
I cannot thank our guests enough for coming on the show, for sharing their knowledge and journey. I always pick up learnings from our guests, and hopefully you learned something new today. If you want to learn more about David, head over to arrowheadadvisors.net. It's arrowheadadvisors.net. Links and more information will also be available in the show notes. If anything in this podcast resonated with you and your business, you might want to check other related episodes, including the interview with Angela Herman, who discusses the process for supplier capacity and quality planning. Also, the interview with Francois Jaffrey from Noviland, who discusses what manufacturers need to know about working with international suppliers. Also, don't forget to subscribe and spread the word among folks with similar backgrounds. If you have any questions or comments about the show, please review and rate us on your favorite podcasting platform, or DM me on any social channels. I'll try my best to respond personally and make sure you get help. Thank you, and I hope to catch you on the next episode of the WBS Podcast.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the WBS Podcast. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform so you never miss an episode. For more information on growth strategies for SMBs using ERP and digital transformation, check out our community at wbs.rocks. We'll see you next time.